It's Cameron Marceau with Monster in a Glass podcast from Black Liver Project. We are here doing another classic cocktail, or really it's a forgotten cocktail. I'm with our researcher and historian, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hey.
We are doing the next cocktail, which is called the Fog Cutter. Now, in our book, there are two recipes for it. The Fog Cutter and the Fog Cutter Early. I don't know what that means. It's like, one is the current one, the other one's the Paleolithic one. I don't know. But that's,
it's what the Neanderthals drank.
It's the missing link cocktail. But that's what I'm here for. I'm here to talk to Jay to answer that question because it makes no sense to me. And I can't read the book because that would be no fun. So can you shed some light on the Fog Cutter for us, Jay?
Yeah, the Fog Cutter and the Fog Cutter Early, as far as I can tell, the only reason I can figure that they're calling it the early one versus the Fog Cutter. So Haig, he talks about how Trader Vic Bergeron, created the Fog Cutter, or possibly Don the Beachcomber, and that's what I was finding too. And Don the Beachcomber owned a bar in Hollywood around the same time.
I picture both of these guys wearing grass hats, like rattan hats, big woven.
I don't know about Don the Beachcomber. I'll talk a little bit about Vic Bergeron in a little bit,
okay?
Because he's kind of a character. But basically, the Fog Cutter Early, the place that I'm able to find it was in Vic Bergeron's book.
So Vic Bergeron is responsible for the early version.
That's, yeah. Based on what Haig lists as the early version is the recipe that shows up in Vic Bergeron.
And by early, we mean 5 a.m.?
Possibly. 5 a.m., 1947 is when the book was published. 46 or 47. It's hard to tell from the information.
So the early one came before the...
Right. Okay. And
it's not just in a... daytime.
And based on what he says about the Fog Cutter, he talks about Tony Ramos was the original bartender at Don the Beachcomber. This is where the conflict of who created the actual drink. I'll go a little bit into the relationship between Vic Bergeron and Don the Beachcomber.
Are the drinks very close?
Not really. I mean, that was the weird thing. When I looked at them, I was like, these aren't altogether close. So we'll go for the recipe based on Vic Bergeron.
So as we've seen before, when you get drinks that are not close, then it suggests that they're riding on the name. That the name has more importance than the actual cocktail. The label is more popular or more available.
Sure.
Now, do you think that that's what's happening here, or is it, or did somebody steal something?
It's possible one of them stole something, but it's not really even stealing. The idea of who came up with this first, you almost have to say it was Trader Vic. As far as I know, Don the Beachcomber never published a book. Vic Bergeron put it down first in 1947.
Don the Beachcomber is... Okay, we've got three names here. Vic Bergeron, who's Trader Vic.
Yeah.
Tony Ramos.
Yes.
And Don the Beachcomber.
And Don the Beachcomber owned the bar in Hollywood.
Okay.
And Tony Ramos, apparently, according to Haig, worked as the original bartender there.
Got it. And Vic Bergeron worked at a different bar...
Vic Bergeron opened up Trader Vic's in Oakland in the 1940s.
So these are all California establishments. Okay.
Right. So the Fog Cutter Early recipe calls for Puerto Rican rum, brandy, gin, which already sounds like a whole shitload of stuff in it, orange juice, lemon juice, orgeat syrup, and then a sherry wine float.
Oh, it's also Pisco brandy.
What is Pisco brandy?
That's South American.
Yeah, so... there's a lot of stuff in that. And then if you look at the Fog Cutter recipe, which Haig says he weaseled out of Tony Ramos later in his life, you know, to get the recipe from him, it's white rum, gin, brandy. So essentially the same booze part of it. But then he uses sweet and sour mix. And he has a note that says, yes, I know I said no sweet and sour mix. But if Tony Ramos mixes the Fog Cutter this way, I bow to his experience in this matter. So that's... kind of the difference is the sweet and sour mix versus what is the, you know, the orgeat syrup, the lemon juice, the orange juice, which is pretty close to sweet and sour mix anyway. So the recipes, I guess, aren't too different other than that main point.
The later Fog Cutter seems like a shortcut, really.
It does, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're adding so many more ingredients. You've got orgeat, which is, you've got two different juices Yeah, the later one is really seems like a shortcut.
And one reason I would say that it probably was Trader Vic that came up with this recipe is that if you read his book, he says, outside of grenadine, orgeat, and simple syrup, you'll eventually run into grief. And what he was getting at by that is, don't use mixes. Don't use these fancy mixes. So he says, if you use these fancy mixes, and this is practical advice that he's giving in his book, which is, you use these fancy mixes, you're going to get them from a distributor, some fancy pants salesman who comes and sells you this brand new mix. You create a drink based around that. That drink becomes really popular, and then the salesman and the company goes out of business. What do? There's no substitute. So if you're using the original ingredients, you're less likely to run out of things like lemon juice, orange juice, you know. So it's really practical advice, which to me makes it seem like he probably was the originator of this particular drink. And that Tony Ramos, again, they were around the same time. They were both tiki bars in California. They probably were ripping each other off left and right, trying to be, you know, one up. Based on newspaper articles I could find, it kind of seemed that way, that they were always borrowing ideas from
each other. Well, based on the recipes, I would say that Don the Beachcomber was busier than Trader Vic.
Why do you say that?
Because if it's a quicker recipe, if it's a shortcut, then you know, you're splashing things together quicker, so because you don't have time to gently float sherry on the top.
And that was the interesting thing, is I did find a number of newspaper articles where they were talking about both of them in the same one. And it was sort of a, hey, come out to California. If you're going to Oakland, gotta hit Trader Vic's, and then head down to Hollywood and hit down the Beachcombers. What I could tell from it was that Trader Vic actually was really big on their food, too. So, okay. And I can't say this for sure. I just couldn't tell. It didn't seem like Don and the Beachcomber was... I think they served food. That wasn't really their gig. Yeah. They weren't a restaurant. Whereas Trader Vic's was more of a restaurant bar, tiki bar. This was like kind of a straight-up bar. And yeah. Maybe they served some food. So Trader Vic's was actually known
splash
for their
food. Splash and dash
food.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. So,
and, okay.
So that to me, which is then weird that Trader Vic would actually be really into using original ingredients and not mixes. So that's the difference in the recipes.
Okay, that actually sheds a lot of light.
You know, they originally called it the Samoan Fog Cutter. See that show up in a lot of newspaper articles where they're calling it the Samoan Fog Cutter.
They both did?
Trader Vic.
Okay.
Called it the Samoan Fog Cutter. And Trader Vic was kind of a character when you start reading about him, and they quote him a lot, and you kind of see why. So, you know, a lot of these newspapers or articles would say, go to Trader Vic's and try the Scorpion or Colonel's Big Opa or the Samoan Fog Cutter. You know, looking at the menu, some of the drinks are starred. And these drinks starred were originated by me. This is Vic Bergeron talking on the menu. By me. And anyone who says different is a dirty stinker. They start giving out the recipes as well. Vic Bergeron, I start finding different things, like, you know, he actually had a wooden leg, which kind of lended to the mystique. The rumor was he lost it fighting a shark, or he was swimming with sharks and he got a bit off.
He really actually, just cut it off himself?
He had a bone disease when he was 4, but he didn't really correct people. People came up with his own, or, you know, or he did maybe and put it out there.
Yeah.
It just kind of lended to the mystique. What was interesting about him is that for having a tiki bar, he had never been to any islands or Hawaii. He got seasick on boats. He said this openly, like, I'll never go to Tahiti. I get seasick. But he liked the idea. He had started another restaurant, and like before Trader Vic, it sounds like, and it had a different theme. But then he saw that, like, Don the Beachcomber was doing really well. He liked the idea, and he started going there. He was a bartender. He based on his book, kind of a good bartender. His book doesn't just have tiki drinks. He covered kind of a lot of the drinks that we've covered. He had recipes for. It seemed like there was some kind of a competition between these two bars. But by all I could tell, he was the one that originated the Fog Cutter drink.
Okay.
Quote me saying that. Oh, prove me wrong. Now, the name of the drink, which was kind of interesting to me, because Haig goes off and says, well, it's based on a... What does he say? Let me quote him exactly. Whoever gave birth to the Fog Cutter, named for a type of diving knife, created a very early and enduring tiki drink. There is a diving knife called the Fog Cutter. I think that is not where the name came from. The Fog Cutter knife looks to be more contemporary. It is possibly even a brand name, which to me sounds like Haig went and Googled fog cutter, because when you do that, you get, first thing that comes up is a knife, mm-hmm. a scuba knife.
Yeah.
And he made the leap, oh, scuba, tiki, water,
yeah,
and made that leap. I don't think that has anything to do with it. And I'll tell you why. Because fog cutter, if you go back in time...
I went back in time.
You went back in time? Yeah. Do it. Do it now. A fog cutter, which is also called an anti-fogmatic.
Is that a machine?
If you consider booze a machine.
Yeah. Yeah. The booze machine.
Okay. The booze machine, anti-fogmatic. So it's going back to the 1700s, late 1700s. Where they're talking about the anti-fogmatic. And basically, it sounded like you do a shot of rum or whiskey in the morning to clear out the fog. It goes on through the 1800s, up through the, you know, I think even the late 1800s, where they talk about the fog cutter. And it sort of changes. The anti-fogmatic, there's one where it says, 1788, as for children, I destroy them by persuading their parents that a dram of raw rum or whiskey is necessary for them every morning to keep the fog out of their throats. That's quoted from the dialogue between a sword and a hogshead of spirits, American Museum. I don't know what the hell that is, but that was the common theme that I kept seeing, that it was either sailors or it was just a way you woke up in the morning, you took a shot, clear out the fog.
Now, there's a couple ways of taking this, because there were some things that I did read when I looked around, and jumping off from what you sent me, there is the idea of cutting the fog of the morning, you know, mm-hmm. like shaking the sleepies out of your eyes and, you know, like waking up, and it's like coffee, you know? It's right. It's like your wake-up shot. It's yeah. like your wake-up shot of rum, like we always have
yeah.
before we go into the office in the morning, right? Right? Okay. And then there's also, I saw references to taking a certain amount of rum based on how much fog was in the air when you woke up in the morning, because humidity and that kind of weather was bad for you, and so you needed to essentially take some medicine to help clear the fog or prevent the fog from affecting you.
Yeah, and some of the definitions here, or some of the references that they make, I should say. So 1789, the great utility of rum has given it the medical name of an anti-fogmatic. The quantity, the quantity taken every morning is in exact proportion to the thickness of the fog. And then...
Do we have locations associated with these?
That one's Massachusetts, which makes sense. You have sailors drinking rum. I mean, if you're sailing on a ship, you know, it's cold, it's foggy. You know, even if they mean
you
it,
want to drink.
Yeah, you want to drink. I mean, even if it's figuratively. But then, you know, the next one I was going to read is that 1806. Do you love your glass? Every hour brings with it a fresh bumper. There, i.e. the U.S., you have a gum tickler, the phlegm cutter, the gall breaker, the anti-fogmatic. So, I mean, that's what it sounded like. When you say fog cutter, it's like you wake up, got to get to work, doing whatever you do on a ship, and it's like, you know, shot a rum, clear out the, it's almost like hair of the dog, but maybe not even so. Maybe it's just like, you take it, you clear out the phlegm, you get a little bit warm,
yeah,
you know, it's cold, it's wet, you know.
The fire wakes you up.
Right, which is not exactly what I would do in the morning. Like, when I wake up in the morning, I'm not like, oh man, I could use some whiskey.
Well,
one shot, I'll be good.
You're not crawling around in the riggings and hoisting sails.
Yet.
So, yeah. As soon as you do, though, you will want to cut the fog.
I probably would.
So, I'm surprised it's not a euphemism for farting, though, you know?
Right, the fog cutter.
Cut the fog.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay.
Well, so, the anti-fogmatic.
That's even better.
And actually, one thing I found was that it was really just a euphemism. This was from a book called American English from 1921, and they attribute it to 1789. An anti-fogmatic is a euphemism for a drink of liquor.
It was
a drink of a liquor.
And you could have it any time.
Right. And that's where the fog cutter came from. You know, to me, was it named after a knife or was it named after liquor?
If there is a fog cutter in 1789, then that's where it's from.
Now,
and it's related directly to booze?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it's from. Now, the question is whether the makers of the drink knew about that.
That's true.
But why not?
Why not? It's not that far after that. You got to figure it was floating around at that time. Now, there is a quote from Trader Vic in his 1972 revised edition of his Bartender's Guide, which is...
Is he still alive? He's not still
alive. He's not alive. Fog cutter. Hell, after two of these, you won't even see this stuff. So, just based on that, even though he's saying, guess what? This is going to make you blind, not clear out the fog.
Yeah.
He's playing on that idea that a fog cutter is supposed to clear out the fog.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, to me, that makes it seem like he did know what he was taught, you know, was attributing that sort of idea that... And if you think about it, even if you didn't know the references, even if you weren't a sailor...
Yeah, it's...
It makes sense. It's like, whew, that cleared out the fog.
Exactly. You know, like, yeah.
So.
Anyone could make that connection. I think it's fascinating that that connection was made so long ago, and it was actually a term used. I kind of wonder if people just talked about it that way.
Yeah.
It's like, good morning, Matilda. Did you have your fog cutter today?
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like, is if... I don't know. It would be interesting to know if it was more than just a literary term, if it was a common... place.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it. It does seem, certainly seems like it was a nautical way of talking about it. You know, and it really depended. It was, it seems that they were either talking about grog, rum, whiskey. Those seemed to be the big three when they were talking.
I imagine it was a shot of something straight.
That would be my guess.
That wouldn't be grog. But, you know, like your Applejack, your rum. I mean, rum was pretty much everywhere because... It was cheap and easy to get a hold of, so
right.
That's what I see happening. More than brandy. Whiskey, maybe, in certain areas, but...
Here's one interesting one where, 1823, the half pint of whiskey, which every man takes in the morning, first thing he does after getting up, is called an antiphlegmatic. So not even a shot, a half pint of whiskey. That is...
God, I was born in the wrong time.
Right.
Fuck.
That is...
Before going into the office, a half pint of whiskey, that would...
Right. That will ruin your day.
Who needs coffee?
Right.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I guess if your job is... Who knows? I mean, maybe...
If you're tilling the field all day, a half pint of whiskey is going to help that happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's cold.
They may not... The rows may not be straight, right. But...
You'll get there
It'll
eventually.
Get done. Yeah.
The more you weave, the more you cover, it's fine.
It's like increased surface area.
Right. I'm sure there's all kinds of math involved.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so is that the whole story?
That's the whole story.
I think that's a cool story.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot more than I expected from the fog cutter. I honestly thought, you know, I thought nautical. I thought, you know, cuts the fog. But I didn't know that it went back so far.
I didn't either. And, you know, I have to say, too, reading about Trader Vic, my impressions of Trader Vic just as an idea, I didn't even think of him as a person. I knew he was a person. Reading about him, it's really fascinating.
I kind of think of him as the man with the yellow hat from Curious George.
You know what I think of?
Trader Vic.
Trader Joe. That's what I...
I know.
I just think of
somebody... And then because they have the monkey that's hidden in the
right.
store.
Exactly.
You know.
So... To me, it was interesting reading about this guy as actually like a businessman. You know, he didn't give a shit about it. I mean, he thought it was a cool idea. He'd never been to one. It wasn't like he was a dude who sat on the beach his whole life and was like, I'm opening up a tiki bar. He was like, this is a good idea. People will eat this shit up. You know, they love rum and we'll make big drinks and put them in fancy glasses with straws and we'll just put all kinds of liquor and fruit juices and... all kinds of stuff, and it'll be great.
And he clearly knew how to create a persona.
He did.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he wore a yellow hat. He might have. But the pictures I saw of him, he wasn't wearing a yellow hat. But I also didn't see his peg leg, so I don't know if...
Well, cool. So we're going to taste... I guess we're going to taste two cocktails. And we'll all stumble home in various disarray.
Make sure there's umbrellas.
So, yeah. I'll tell Michael. Michael? Umbrellas. So we're gonna take this to the tasting team now.
The Fog Cutter, version 1. 1/2 ounce Orgeet. 2 ounces Don Q Gold rum, 1 ounce Capel Pisco brandy, 1/2 ounce Plymouth gin, 1 ounce orange juice, 2 ounces lemon juice, 1/2 ounce Sheffield cream sherry. Version 2, 1 ounce Don Q white rum, 1/2 ounce Plymouth gin, 1/2 ounce Christian Brothers brandy, 1/2 ounce sweet and sour mix, 2 dashes simple syrup.
Okay, so everyone, we are here at the Brixton in Andersonville in Chicago. We're going to taste the Fog Cutter now, and I am joined here by the tasting team. To my left is Bethany Lang.
Hello.
Bethany?
Yes.
When's the earliest you've ever started drinking?
On my 21st birthday, I think I had my first mimosa at like 8:30 or 9 a.m. And we went all day.
That's early?
All day.
And next to her is Kevin Rotichek.
Hello.
When have you started? The earliest you've started.
You know what? In recent memory, 11 a.m. for a bachelor party. I've probably gone earlier, but I don't remember.
Next to him is Rachel Rubin.
Hi. When you said earliest, I thought you meant like age.
Started down at 6.
That'll be a different cocktail.
Right. Okay, earliest time-wise? I don't know. Probably about 10 a.m. It sounds like a, I don't know.
He's had a drink of brunch before.
Yeah, like brunch. Or like...
These questions always make you second guess yourself.
It's because it's all foggy. You ask questions about times that are foggy.
And next to me, to my right, is Nicole Pizzini.
It's got to be brunch, mimosas.
You guys are all just like lightweights or something.
No, see, it doesn't matter how early you start drinking. What matters is if you continue throughout the day.
Well, if you start at 6, then it's hard to make it.
You're hungover by 3 p.m.
Without it. Yeah. Well, what you do is you have your afternoon nap.
Yeah, oh, you have to have a nap.
Around, yeah. And that then you can get up at like 1 and keep going.
That's right.
Unless you do other things that keep you going.
Coffee, otherwise.
And sometimes the nap itself can be rejuvenating in other ways. Where I went to school, we had flunk day. And like at 5 a.m. the bells would ring and people would run through the campus blaring horns and yelling and screaming. And then you'd get up and
start drinking. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Then you go out in the street and dance for a while and then...
That sounds fun.
Crazy. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. To bring it all together, Fog Cutter. This is actually a colonial drink. It's what people would have to start the day. It seems like there's 2 ways that you need the Fog Cutter, either to like fight off the grip.
Grippy?
Yeah. Yeah. A chill from the fog, or just to wake up.
Yeah. Clear the metaphorical fog.
Exactly. And put something else in its place. It's like, I've got to spend a day climbing rigging on a ship.
I'm gonna need a drink.
I'm going to push a plow for 12 hours. I'm going to split wood for 8 after that. So yeah, you probably want to start with a half pint. Is that what it was?
Yes.
I think a half pint of rum. Yeah.
And and from what I understand, we were talking about the movie 1776 today, which is apropos of nothing. But in that movie, it's the Continental Congress, and they start drinking rum like when they get there in the morning. Like, I think that was not an uncommon...
No.
Right? People would just start the day with a drink.
Yeah.
And drink all day.
And apparently it was called a fog cutter.
Yeah.
But I think in part they were taking it from their European habits where you couldn't drink the water.
So you would drink booze.
Yeah, because booze was always safe. It was always pure.
Yeah.
Okay, now Michael has brought us some samples of the ingredients of the Fog Cutter. So we have some cream sherry.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that one smells nice.
Oh, cream sherry is delicious.
Yeah, it is.
Sherry is a perfect drink in front of a fire on a cold evening with a book. It makes you feel warm.
My new masterpiece mystery show leads me to believe that vicars in England traditionally drink sherry.
I think it's kind of an old people drink. Older people in older times drank sherry.
And wore smoking jackets and had pipes.
That's right. Yeah. Those are my people.
Now, what else? Okay, we also have here...
Pisco.
The pisco. This is another ingredient from...
Chile.
Yeah, it's from Chile. It's a Chilean brandy.
Chile. Vamos, Chile.
Have you ever had pisco?
Yes. In Chile.
You had to have pisco.
I did. Mm-hmm. It was wine or pisco. That's pretty much what you got. It was really cheap.
It was like you were in the colonial era.
I've had a pisco sour. I've never had straight pisco.
Yeah. Well, you're in for a treat. Big time.
It tastes a little soapy.
I'm scared of it. Can I try? Absolutely, yes. Get away from
it. Yeah.
No, it's fine. It's just very strong, and it tastes a little soapy.
It tastes like something that'll clean your wounds.
It's got fire.
No, Nicole! My poor lips!
Yeah.
This is bad. This is not a good thing to be drinking in the winter when you have dry lips.
No.
Oh, man. I should have put on lip balm before this.
There will be no infection.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's from the sherry, but it has a little bit of a fruity aftertaste to me. Is that just me?
I don't get it.
I think that might be the brand.
Okay.
I get battery acid. I said I drank it. I didn't say I liked it.
It burns like vodka. It smells way better than it tastes. It does smell pretty good. If there's anything we've learned from this podcast, it's that smells are trickery when it comes to alcohol. Lies! I thought it was going to be too sweet, but then it just was fire.
It's like just drinking like vodka straight.
It is, yeah, it does remind me most of vodka.
But like especially painful vodka.
It burns more than anything.
It's got more flavor than
it does.
Yeah, it does.
It definitely does.
That's probably
it. It's not neutral. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But it burns.
Yeah, that's
it burns.
I hope it doesn't make our drink burn too much.
No.
I don't think
so. Is there not much in it?
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff in it.
Yeah, and we're going to try the early one first.
With or without pisco?
That's the one with it.
Okay.
And remember, there were two versions, and one of them, I said to Jay, I was like, one of them really seems like a rushed drink. Like it's a lot quicker.
Yeah.
We're going to try the one that takes more time. They actually float sherry on the top of it.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, the sherry is great.
Well, it's just, compared to the pisco, it's so mellow.
It is.
It's like a pisco is like, I'm here. Sherry's like,
yeah. Soothing.
I'm delicious.
A little sweet.
But it's time for bed.
It's almost no burn. Like, I don't know what the proof is on this sherry, but it's nowhere near 80 proof like this pisco is.
God, yeah,
that
pisco is like needles on your mouth.
See, but sherry, because I really like to drink port. And sherry's fairly high alcohol.
They're in the same family.
Yeah, they are.
But isn't it also fortified wine?
Yeah. It's just, sherry's lighter. I'm not entirely, I mean, I don't know about the rationale there, but that's what makes it dangerous, because, like, I've poured myself, like, a whole wine glass of port before, being like, this is delicious, I'm gonna drink more, and then you're, like, dead.
Yeah.
Because
it's basically like a bottle of wine.
Yeah, but it tastes like sugar and delicious.
So what else is in the first one?
Well, you've got rum. These are essentially tiki drinks.
Yes.
So you've got orgy, you've got rum, you've got pisco.
I thought I saw gin on the list.
It might be.
Because I thought it was very strange to combine gin with rum and sherry.
Yeah.
I've never seen that combination before.
So this will be the Trader Vic version.
The two different versions are from two people, it seems like.
It's from two establishments.
Yeah.
One was Trader Vic up in Oakland.
Yeah.
And his whole thing was more of an experience. It was more of a foodie thing.
Right.
So, like, they had good food. They had the good drinks. So it was definitely more of a classier place. And then Don the Beachcombers down in Hollywood seemed a lot more Hollywood.
Yeah.
A lot more rock and roll.
Right, right.
I have a feeling that they were just throwing drinks
together
fast and whipping them down the bar. Because they didn't really have the food.
Yeah.
You know.
You were there to drink.
Yeah. Well, not me. I've never been there.
Notice all the sherry is like gone in the tasting cups. And the poor pisco. Oh.
Smart.
Oh.
sorry for Cam's mouth.
Yeah. Mouth needles.
One shot, Throw it back. Oh my gosh, here they are.
Yeah. It's a big drink, so I made one. It's a lot of ingredients in there, a lot of citrus. Per drink, there's 3 ounces of juice. So usually if a drink is 3 ounces, that's a big drink.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's 3 ounces of juice, another 3 and a half ounces of liquor.
Okay, wow.
So I split it up over a course of 3 drinks for you guys. That's actually one ingredient, so I just kind of made it in 3. Probably would be better off to do 2, but I made 3. If you guys want another one, I'll make the same one. If you guys want to wait till you go to the second one, I'll do that. Pass it around. Tell me what you think. Interesting. Again, I like anything with that orgy.
Yeah.
You know?
So what did you put in here?
We have the Capel Pisco.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the Irish or the...
The Sheffield
Sherry Cream, which is something that I've never seen before.
And that just is floated on
the
top,
floated right on top.
Wow.
And that's the final ingredient. I used orange juice, lemon juice, like a 1/4 ounce of orgy, which again is a very strong almondy type of non-alcoholic mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very syrupy. It's almost like its own simple syrup. So I'm thinking if maybe that's why in the second one, I don't know if Orgeet's in there, but maybe that's what they substituted. That's
no,
probably
this
what they
is the fancier one.
It's the fancier
the
one.
Other okay. one. The other one you'll notice is sweet and sour mix.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying they probably switched the sweet and sour for the Orgeet,
yeah.
You know. And then I used the Plymouth gin, and I think that's the only other liqueur that's in there.
There was the rum, too, right?
Oh, I used the Don Q. Yeah, there's a lot of rum. Don Q rum, which is the only gold rum I have.
Fantastic.
You know, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Enjoy, guys. I'll be back.
Smells delicious.
Oh, it does.
It smells very tiki.
You can't have any, Nicole.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
It's bubblegummy. You think so? Yeah.
I can see what you're saying.
You do get a bite from the citrus. I thankfully do not taste the pisco. But you're right, it does have a kind of like sweet aftertaste. Really like sugary.
Do you think that's the sherry?
I don't know. Maybe a little bit of the orgy too.
So Pearson Winter Blues.
Yeah,
this is...
Go find a beach.
Very tropical.
I like the orgeet syrup in here.
Yeah.
It's good.
Do you get the sweet aftertaste, too?
Uh-huh.
My mouth is still puckering.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't get any, like...
It's pretty citrusy.
It's like hanging on. Like, it's, like, still making my mouth wince.
Yeah, there's no mouth wincing. I mean, it's not like drinking straight up juice. You can tell that there's booze in there.
No,
but
I know.
It's very juicy.
But like, it's... What's left after everything is gone is this tartness that is just...
Yeah.
It's clamped onto my entire mouth.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just because I'm a baby.
Well, we know how you feel about citrus.
Yeah.
What about bubbles? Like, I'm still getting bubble gum. I just feel like...
The aftertaste is pretty sweeter than you would think. I mean, to me, it's like all the good things about your very stereotypical tropical drinks, but it's more complex because of the orgeet and probably the pisco helps and the sherry.
Bubble yum.
It's not just your typical light beach drink.
I'd say the aftertaste is more interesting than the first hit.
Yeah.
It really tastes like orange juice when I first start sipping it. It's not till I finish my sip. It's like, oh, there's other flavors there.
Yeah.
It really tastes very orange juicy to me.
Yeah.
Do you think this could rock an umbrella?
It's
I don't know
if it's fruit forward enough.
Yeah.
I don't think it's appreciably better than a screwdriver.
Well,
I do. Easily.
There's more to it, yeah. There is.
I mean,
everybody's going to hurt you.
The finish is a little better, but...
I mean, if we're doing tropical drinks, I just think a painkiller is going to win every time.
Yeah, but I like this because like, it's like all of the good things about this your stereotypical crappy tropical drinks, but it's more complex. It's like a thinking man's screwdriver. And what was the other... Orange juice and lemon juice, he says? Orange and lemon?
Yeah, orange and lemon.
I'd be curious to have this with, like, a little pineapple juice in it.
Yes. I think pineapple juice would be really good.
That might make it a little sweeter and less tart.
Then it'd be really tiki.
Yeah.
Tiki.
Tiki.
Coconut milk in there.
Yeah. But then it wouldn't be this cocktail.
No, it's really not.
Then it would be a painkiller.
I like it.
I like it, too.
I think it's good.
I would have a few.
You're
not a huge fan?
It's fine. But I think if you put pineapple juice and good vodka in a glass, it would taste just as good.
Damn.
Sorry.
Harsh words.
This is kind of where I'm at
too. Maybe it's got too much of like a creamsicle vibe. I don't know. Maybe it's with that cream sherry with the
orgeet.
Yeah, like it's. I kind of want it to be more citrusy.
Yeah, it is very unique. I mean, you don't typically see a lot of sweetness in a drink like this.
We haven't done any tiki sort of drinks yet, either. Really.
No. I mean, the closest would have been the two punches that we did.
Yeah.
Because they had so much rum.
Yeah. This is distinct from that, though.
This is kind of a proto-tiki drink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does feel very, like, 1940s, 50s Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, I can totally see this.
Yeah.
Envision this there.
And really, was there such a thing as a tiki drink before then?
No, that was, I mean, right? I mean,
not unless you actually went to an island.
I would drink the hell out of this on a hot summer day.
Yeah.
I want a bunch of these on a beach somewhere or on my patio on a hot summer day.
So this is a good one for
you. Oh, yeah. Because it is all of the good things about a tiki drink with more complexity.
I still feel like it's early, like it's an early version, and so like we're not seeing what we're used to in it. But I think it's interesting that you think of it as more of a tiki drink.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's orange juice, rum.
Do tiki drinks really have orange juice?
In my world, they do.
I thought they usually had like fruit punch and rum,
yeah.
And that's it.
Have a lot of different juices in them.
Yeah,
I mean, especially if you look at like, I mean, there's kind of like a resurgence in that now. I mean, like we could go down to three dots and a dash sometime if you really want to like immerse yourself in tiki stuff.
In the tiki culture.
In the tiki room.
The traditional tiki culture, yes.
Go to River North.
So
nobody wants.
So Kevin,
nobody wants that.
You're not. As much of a fan?
You know, I don't. I enjoy it. It's fine, but it definitely doesn't knock my socks off. For the amount of effort that Michael had to put in, the amount of ingredients, it doesn't show as well as I would hope.
Yeah.
It's pleasant enough to drink, but I wouldn't order it.
I guess that's kind of true. I really, really like this drink, but at the same time, I feel like if you simplified the ingredient list, you could make something that was like half a letter grade lower in quality but still good. Does that make sense? Like if this drink was an A, if I use less ingredients, I could probably make a drink that was a B plus or an A minus.
Maybe you'll see that
is
one.
Is it trying too hard? I think it is trying too hard.
When somebody else makes it for me, I don't think it's trying too hard. If I tried to make it myself, then yes.
Yeah, I mean, for an 8-ingredient cocktail, it sure tastes a lot like
a 2-ingredient cocktail.
It tastes like bubble tape. I don't know. It's just like, it tastes like the bubble gum that I didn't get to have as a kid because it was full of sugar, you know?
It's good, and I would have another one. I would not want to make this myself because it's too much work for this payoff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. No, I could see that. Like, I was actually thinking to myself, like, if I, you know, because this would be good on a patio in the summer, like, would I buy the ingredients to make this? Well, no, probably not, because it is pretty...
You'd buy it in a pre-mixed jug.
Right. I mean, for something that is fairly simple, it is complicated in terms of ingredients.
Right.
Yeah, and it'd be hell to make on a busy Saturday night.
Yeah.
It'd be like, yes, we'd like the whole table of 20.
Yeah.
And make sure you float the cream sherry perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've decided.
Orgeet is like my new thing.
I think it's like climbing up there with like, I like anything with ginger beer.
You should contact the Kool-Aid people. Be like, new flavor.
Orgeet
flavor. Oh, yeah.
It's funny because the combination of the orange and the lemon in this tastes a lot like sweet and sour.
That's what people do now.
Yeah. It gives that very similar kind of sticky, like you were saying, that sticks on your tongue.
Yeah, but like the actual sweet and sour mix is kind of like it's like a radioactive sourness. It's like if you blended up some Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that sounds good.
Like, it's gotta have like corn syrup in it, right? I mean, it's
for sure. Oh, I'm sure.
And yellow dye number this, and green dye number that.
Yeah, it's
and
like, it's gross.
Yellow dye number cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. But how many people had like whiskey sours like crazy when they were 19?
Oh my god. Whiskey sours were the only cocktail I drank.
That Amaretto Stone sours.
Yeah.
That was big when you're like first starting to drink in college.
Yeah, pretty much anything sour. When I was in college and I would go to a bar, I would have no idea what to order. I would just something with sour mix. Amaretto Stone. You introduced me to Amaretto Stone sours. Before that, I was really big in whiskey sours.
My god.
Everyone made poor choices when you're like 19.
Whiskey sours have a fairly high alcohol content.
Yeah, but you drink a couple of those and you're like,
yeah.
Like, I'm burning. Like,
you don't get heartburn when you're 19.
Yeah, and then I went and ate a chili dog and a bunch of chili cheese fries, and I went to bed.
Yeah, because poor choices. Because being 19 is awesome.
Yeah, doesn't matter. You barely get a hangover. You can drink whatever you want.
You still have a pancreas.
Right. You can still regulate things. But other things you cannot, like dumb choices.
What organ handles that?
It's supposed to be the brain, but I don't think it works very well.
I think it's one of the ones we're destroying tonight.
As Jeff Judy says, you're not fully cooked yet until you're like 23. Like, your brain still develops.
This drink I would have loved when I was 19.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you would have thought you were so classy because there's so many ingredients.
I orgied my drink. Orgiate.
Orgiate. And Michael has brought us our second round.
So this is a blended drink. So we don't have a blender. All right. So what I did is I shook the
really
heck
it's
out
blended?
Of it. It's a blended like... drink. It says blend and then pour into a goblet.
Okay.
So I just shook the
Michael
crap out
got
of
a
it
workout.
And then poured it over crushed ice.
Thank you.
Same
Thank
type
you.
Of thing. It won't. You know, it's like it'll still just kind of be just as watered down as it would if it were blended.
Okay.
I used the Don Q White Rum, so I stayed with the same brand. I used the same Plymouth Gin. And then this is called for just regular brandy, all right? So I put a little bit of, like a half ounce of regular brandy in there.
Okay. Like Christian Brothers?
Yeah. And then, I'm sorry, Christian Brothers is exactly what I used. Some simple syrup, which is for us just a little bit of egg white, a little bit of egg white.
Yeah.
Lemon juice and I should say sour mix is what they call for, and that's just a little bit of simple syrup, a little bit of lemon juice.
Okay.
All right? And then it said add a little dash of simple syrup on there. I didn't do that too much just because, you know, I didn't want to make it too sweet. You can always add to that. You know, the gin and the brandy and the, you know, it's interesting. Then there's a little float of a little bit of Luxardo on top that I just floated on top. And it asked for a cherry brandy, and that was the close I had.
Really? It asked for a cherry
just a
brandy?
Little float. It's not in the ingredients. It just says right at the bottom.
Mix it up.
Mix it up.
It smells like bubblegum.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
It does not taste like bubblegum.
That tastes like bubblegum. Maybe
it
a little.
Like?
This is quite a departure from the last one.
Yes.
Instead of starting with citrus and ending with bubblegum, this sort of like starts briefly bubblegummy and then goes right into booze.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lot of citrus in here.
Better.
In fact, there is no citrus. Well, aside from what they have in their sweet and sour mix.
I think I get the Luxardo. I think we've had enough drinks with that in it that I can now recognize it.
I don't get, like, any citrus.
No.
Something wrong with me? Okay,
no.
Good.
Nothing's wrong with me. I imagine if this was made with straight-up, like, bottled pre-mix sour mix.
It would taste different.
Yeah.
We're not going to get that here.
No, because this is a nice place.
Because we have nice things.
Yeah, Michael, could you get some Skol vodka for us? Just...
went down to like Walgreens, we could get some sour mix.
I do get the sweetness. I mean, that's got to be from the Luxardo, right? It's.
I don't know.
No?
There's a lot of simple syrup.
In order to replace that sweet and sour mix, you got to add a lot of sugar.
But again, this is like real sugar and not corn syrup, so you don't like when I drink like, you know, sour mix from like a plastic bottle, you feel it in the back of your throat.
I mean, they're both very good, but they are very different. I mean, this is definitely just like you said, you know, throw a bunch of alcohol in a glass and slide it down the counter.
This tastes similar to many of the other cocktails that we've tried. I feel like there's something similar about this to other things that we've tried. I'd say the first one that we had was, you know, a lot more, you know, fresh juice,
well,
citrusy.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, it was definitely different than a lot of stuff we tried. This just feels like, I don't know, I kind of feel like we've done this.
Yeah, I feel like the first one was one of the more complex ones we've had, not even in terms of number of ingredients, but just it had a lot of layers to it, the first one. Yeah,
you know, it was hard to pick one flavor out over the others.
It was, I mean, to me, the first one was a lot closer to the cocktails that you would find now. This one is just like
I feel like the flavors in this drink we've had before done better.
Mm.
So what do you think all in all on this one?
All in all, first one, I really enjoyed. Very complex flavors, very bright citrusy up front, sweet aftertaste. Second one, a lot of alcohol in a glass. Not a whole lot going on, but good. I mean, they're both good in just very different ways.
Kind of like a Long Island iced tea.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a lot of thought.
Do you feel less foggy?
I will feel more foggy soon. For right now, though, I feel crystal clear.
So what do you think, Kevin?
The first one, I wish I had a little bit more of a bite to it. Because it didn't, like, I know there's a lot of fancy flavors in it and everything like that. But it was the aftertaste that I was impressed with on the first drink. But the first hit, and as I'm drinking it, just tastes like orange juice. And I thought, just kind of sneak up on you. I want a little more something up front on that one. And yeah, the second one maybe a little simpler and throw a lot of booze together, but it feels like you're drinking something.
So you like the second one more?
I kind of do. I guess I put them pretty close to one another, but I think I'm a little more let down with the first one.
How about you, Rachel?
If I'm going to pick a drink for the morning that's going to cut the fog, I would rather have the first one, because that seems like more of a morning drink, and I think that really comes from the orange juice. I mean, if you're going straight for, like, boozy flavor, I mean, the second one for sure. But, yeah, if I had to choose a fog cutter to cut the fog in the morning, I would choose the first one.
Do you think either one of them is more tiki than the other?
Oh, the first one's more tiki, for sure.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I would agree with that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. The second one's fine. It's more boozy. It's more of a cocktail, but I don't think I would be in the mood to drink this in the morning. I would rather drink this.
I don't think these were drunk in the morning either. Like,
it's just their
like the origin, like the name comes from an old habit, but like these particular ones, they just took the name from.
Okay, well, if we're talking like actually like you want something to clear the fog that's outside and like let the sunshine in, that's definitely the person with all the juice.
If you're scuba diving, which one do you want?
You want the one with the shears?
Yeah.
And the serrated blade.
But the second drink is good. I would have this, you know, if I was going out someplace like at night. Sure.
How about yourself?
Yeah, Nicole. I think the second drink tastes more karaoke bar than tiki bar. It just
not
tastes,
metal bar.
It tastes like poorly blended booze to get you drunk fast.
It's like Motley Crue.
Yeah, it just feels like a.
It's Hollywood.
Yeah, it feels LA. Like a frat party or something. Yeah. It tastes like bad choices. The first one is like, as a child, I would have loved it. It tastes like a fruity, bubblegummy. Tutti Frutti drink.
Speaking of bad choices,
right?
As a child, I would have loved the first
time. It's childish flavors. I don't know what else to say about it. It tastes like kid candy.
Yeah, you're right. I kind of get that. And yeah, I think I'm falling in line with everybody. I mean, this is less citrusy. The second one is less citrusy. So still, there's three different liquors mixed in a glass. So that's like more work than I'm going to do.
Yeah, and I mean, it tastes like a not very good vodka lemonade, so it's kind of like, why bother?
Well, that wraps up the first tiki drinks we've done.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Very different.
Yeah, like old-timey tiki drinks. We'll be back again next week for more old drinks that we find strange and possibly offensive. We'll see you next week. Bye now.
Isn't it? Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Rutajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss. The Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground. Dan Cruz for art direction and editing. And Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive. Become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and, as it happens, updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.